For October 23rd, 2006, it's the Lullabot Podcast. So it's episode 25, I think, kind of 25. We sort of, well, we've got this other thing going on sort of simultaneously. We've got Robert Douglas did a bunch of interviews with the Summer of Code people, and we've been kind of putting those out as little bitty little podcasts, and I've got some more of those to go. But we're not calling those a full episode, they're just a little bit. So it's episode 25, I guess, sort of-ish, although we've had other little bits of podcasts in there. It's the Lullabot Drupal podcast. We get together every week, well, more or less every week. So many caveats, and talk about Drupal. Either way, we're talking about Drupal today, now, right here. I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with
Matt Westgate
and
Jeff Eaton,
and also
Nathan Haug.
Nate, how are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good.
We're waiting for Angie Webchick Byron. She may join us at some point if she gets back on the internet where she belongs, and she may jump in a little bit later. But for the meantime, it's just the four of us. Nathan is the newest Lullabot, the newest one to join us on the podcast. Hi, Nate. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. I'm glad to be here.
You want to tell us a little bit about what you're famous for in the land of Drupal?
Yeah, sure. I kind of got my claim to fame from doing web form stuff, which I didn't start, but I'm now the most active contributor in it, and I do CCK fields, work in the forums, a lot of patches to contrib modules and core. And that's about it in the Drupal world, and
but you yeah. Actually went to art school, right? I mean, you're like an art guy,
right? Yeah, art, which is quickly becoming my new claim to fame as being a guy in Drupal that got a BFA, I guess. So,
well, it's a rarity. There's a lot of computer science degrees, but not a lot of BFAs. So, you know. It's good to have some artists. I don't know that we ever actually did like a proper introduction with Jeff Eaton either. I mean, we just kind of threw him in the podcast last time and, you know, talked about stuff. But Jeff is also a recent addition to the Lullabot team. And Jeff, you want to talk about your various claims to fame as well?
Well, I started out in Drupal land probably about a year and a half to 2 years ago. I dove in and started working on the voting API, and that was my first really big Drupal project, and it ended up growing into something much bigger than I had anticipated. And now there's probably, I think, pushing about a dozen different voting and rating and user feedback modules that are based on that API. There's a couple other projects that I've been working on and off. I've helped port other contrib modules to 4.7 and now 5.0. And with the Drupal 5.0 release, I dove in and started hacking through the form API and learned some of its innards, and worked along with Chex and Adrian in getting some of the new form API 2.0 features into Drupal 5.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. You definitely came to our attention for all the core work that you were doing, and then the form API stuff was just amazing. Like, it's not really one of those things you think about, but then you just have need for it. I think just like you say, you just have more and more need for it, and it's really solid work. So,
Well, there's a lot of cool stuff coming down the pipe in 5.0. So.
Yeah, I understand the next American election is all going to take place within the voting API.
We'll just see how much controversy there is before any claims are made.
You know. They'll have a Drupal kiosk in the voting booth and touch screen with proceeds going to Jeff Eaton. Vote for... It's not rigged. It's not rigged. Anyways,
vote Greece in 2006.
Yes. So I'm trying to think of what we did on the last sort of proper podcast. We had all sorts of things. We did a podcast from the live from the Brussels DrupalCon, and the DrupalCon was a lot of fun. And a lot of really interesting things went on there. Always a good chance to get together with all the smart people in Drupal land. Looks like the next DrupalCon is going to be at Yahoo. That's the word on the street. So we should also mention we had a great success with our workshops in San Francisco. Right, Matt? I mean, you and Angie taught the Drupal API class. It was really fascinating.
Yeah, that was fun. Lots and lots of pictures of diagrams, flowcharts. We talked a lot about, we built some modules and some Node bookmark modules and some other ways to demonstrate the various APIs. And we talked a lot about our own best practices that we learned from our year of experience as a company, how we manage SVN on top of CVS and all that fun stuff. But yeah, it was a really good time. We got to do a Drupal meetup too, right? So when we were talking about views, modules, and class at the meetup, we could say, hey, there's the guy that wrote Views modules, and then all the workshop attendees would go bow to Earl Miles and buy him a beer. So, yeah, it was a good time. And Neil Drum was there, it was fun.
It was a very fancy, fancy bar. I think a lot of people felt uncomfortable with how fancy it was.
I felt uncomfortable.
We had it all set up at another place, and then...
It fell apart.
And so we moved it across the street to another place, which turned out to be some super fancy hotel bar. And so we were the scrappy open source development people sitting in the corner.
But it was good.
But it was great.
Yeah.
And great week of workshops. We're planning the next week of workshops. It looks like we've got Providence, Rhode Island marked out as a great place that people from both Boston and New York can come easily. It's sort of lower prices for hotels than the $300 a night thing that was happening in San Francisco stuff like that. So we're really excited. We're going to do focus the whole week on like one project. I think we're going to build a customer relationship manager, a CRM, our contact relationship manager application. But we'll split it up into three workshops. The first workshop is Monday and Tuesday, and that will be hands-on, what we're calling hands-on Drupal. So it'll be basically kind of getting in there and figuring out Drupal and what it does and looking at the functionality and how you would put together the functionality for this project. Look at the different contrib modules that are out there and what they do. And we'll start putting together all the functionality for this project. Wednesday and Thursday are theming Drupal, and we will theme the project to make it look really good, and show everyone sort of how Drupal theming works. And then Friday, we've got John Ressig, who is the developer of jQuery, which is the new Ajax library that's going into Drupal 5. He's going to come down, and we're going to just Ajaxify and really pimp out the site. So I think it's going to be really cool. And then after the whole week is over, we'll put this out as a distribution of Drupal CRM distribution, assuming that we still go with this plan. It's still up for better suggestions. I think this is a good one, though. But everyone will be able to download Drupal as a CRM distribution. So so I'm excited about this. This is a really sort of applied class, which we haven't done in the past. We've done sort of more abstract kind of things. And so this will be a good chance for people to come and sort of see the process of how we put together a project when we work on it, and sort of following it through and see what the pieces are to make it come together. But people can come to just the parts of it that they're interested in if they just want to come to theming or just the Ajax or just the sort of hands-on sort of introduction kinds of stuff. They can come to that too. So it should be really cool. So what do we want to talk about today? We should talk about some of the articles that have gone up on the Lullabot site recently. It's always good to sort of follow up on those. Nate, you put out some a GPL icon library recently. You want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, sure. I released the Lullacons Icon Pack 1. It's 113 icons. They're all sort of geared towards website use. That is, they have icons that we would find a lot on a website, such as a Drupal site. To make that clear.
Because this is sort of the problem that we were finding with other icon sets was that oftentimes, like the Tango icons or something like that, they were really oriented towards like user interface for applications and stuff, but they weren't oriented towards like website usage and content management in that way.
Right, and something else that was really important to making a Drupal icon set or one that was made for Drupal was that the licensing is that other icon sets that are out there, most of them are Creative Commons license or GNU lesser license or something else like that. Well, if you're using icons in your modules or in Drupal core, those icons should all actually be GPL. And so it's a licensing issue also that there wasn't anything really available before now.
Yeah, and so people can come and download them. We're sort of in the process of reorganizing our site, so we'll have like a download page, but for now it's just in the articles section. And then you also put up a whole article about sort of how people can make other icons that sort of fit into the set so that it can be a communal contribution kind of thing, right?
Right, and part of the whole GPL thing is that you include your source with your code, so to speak, you know, if this were a software project, but because it's a design project, we're trying to do the exact same thing by releasing the source files for images, which in this case are a series of Photoshop PSD files. So anybody can come in and they can get a hold of the source graphics as well and actually go in and make their own changes and then make more icons, hopefully. They'll send their contributions back to us and say, hey, I made these, and we'd like you to put them up on your website. And we'll say, sure, they look great.
Yeah, that's what we'll say. We've actually already had a few people do some icons based on this, so it's exciting. And your tutorials, you make it look so easy. I haven't actually tried it yet. But
Yeah, the video tutorials are great. I learned a lot just by watching those, of all the different things that you can do in Photoshop. But you make it really easy, since they're vector-based graphics, to go in and change the colors and tweak the other elements that you want to refine for using it in your own site. So even though, you know, there are 113 icons, you can still change the colors and sort of make them your own and make them unique. And it's really a great idea.
So has there been talk about getting these into as part of the Drupal distribution, or how that might happen? I mean, I know that there was some thinking. I know Jeff Eaton, you were thinking about an icons module, and Nate, you were talking about that too. Do you guys want to talk about sort of the issues around that?
Well, on my end, one of the issues is that in the Unix community and in web development and stuff like that, there's a lot of people starting to get on board with the idea that tons and tons of icons are being created for a relatively small set of needs, like you need a copy icon, a paste icon, a new user icon, a folder icon, things like that. And there's a project called there's a couple of different projects that have been put together to try to unify like the naming conventions for all of these different icons for different generalized tasks. Well, I was thinking it would be really good if we could use that and have an icon module for Drupal that would allow module to say, okay, I want to put an icon of a folder or an icon to create a new user in my user interface, and just request it from the icons module, and it would be able to say what current icon pack you have installed or things like that. And at that level, it works great. There's some hitches that we're trying to iron out with how style sheets connect with those icons and how they would be able to retrieve those, you know, dynamically located icons and stuff like that. There's some
right,
weird
because
things.
One of the problems is that sort of from a semantic HTML standpoint, a lot of times the icons are just bullets or some sort of describing kinds of things. They're not actually proper content on the page, and so therefore they need to be defined by a style sheet and, you know, function as sort of a background image or something like that. But when Drupal starts to get into dynamic style sheets, things start to get quickly very confusing. Several reasons.
You guys were talking about using the image cache module for some of this too, right? What does that thing do?
Well, I'll jump in on that. Part of the plan might be, we're not entirely sure how to go about this, would be to make it so that you could reference icons from within the CSS files. We emulate the behavior the image cache uses.
Whoa, weird.
Which is image cache, what you do is you make a request to a certain file or image, and what it does is it looks for that file, and then it generates a cached version of it, and then the second time you make a request to it, it just immediately goes to the cached version of the file, which was created on the first request.
Wait a second. So what it does is if it doesn't find it, in other words, if Drupal generates a 404 error, then it builds an image or a CSS file on the fly?
Right. It builds a cached version of the image. You make a request to an image that doesn't exist.
So what's an example of where that comes in handy? Is that for like resizing images?
Right. Well, you can do a lot of things. Image cache lets you do three actions right now, which is scale, resize, and crop. And you can do any combination of those three things. It's going to have some other features in there pretty soon, too, like watermarking or maybe adding borders to the edges of images. And then you can do all kinds of crazy things. And you define certain presets, and then you make a request to, say, the files directory, image cache, the preset name, and then the path to the original file. Well, there isn't actually a file there at all, but on that request, image cache intercepts it because it has a menu item at that same level, and then intercepts the request the first time because the menu item will take hold of it, but the second time, the htaccess file says that if a file exists at that location, just pass the file in. So the first request creates the file, and the second request, Drupal isn't called at all because the htaccess file says, oh, the file exists, just pass it back.
Oh, bizarre. That's so weird.
It's a genius idea, and I'll give credit to Dopri for that. So
when it hits that 404 the first time, how does it know where to find the image to create the new one?
It's not actually a 404 that's called, because image cache sets up a menu item within the files directory. So the menu item is at file, the path to your files directory / image cache. And so the first request, it calls the menu action defined by image cache.
Wow.
And, Yeah, it's really crazy. And so the idea here, is that we do the same thing for the icon module. And what that would allow you to do is say you could just call your icon, say, slash icon slash 32, which would be 32 pixels, slash folder dot ping or whatever. And there wouldn't actually be a file at icon slash 32 slash folder ping. Initially, there wouldn't be anything there at all, but then the icons module would set up a path at slash icons, and it would intercept that, and then it would automatically create the icon according to whatever icon set you had enabled at that time. So yeah. So that's in theory the plan for the icons module, which doesn't exist, but it's based off of image cache, which does exist and is very cool.
Cool. Nice. So part of the thing, you know, so we've got these icons, but it seems like it's kind of at this point not enough, and there's not enough context to just offer them to Drupal and say, here, drop them. I mean, we could, you know, have an icons directory in Drupal, but of course it would kind of be up to the modules as to what to do with that and how to do it and stuff like that. And in this way, then there's some context and sort of a central controller for icons and swapping out different icons and creating new icons and distributing icon sets and stuff like that. So that's pretty cool.
In some ways, the flexibility of Drupal's theming system, where you can have stuff from the core Drupal installation, modules can add on their own stuff, and themes can then override it with their own stuff as needed, and it all cascades nicely. That kind of system adds another layer of complexity to this. So I think the idea of using the caching stuff with that is potentially a really good solution. So hopefully something will be emerging from that shortly.
Cool. Welcome, Angie Byron.
Hey. Angie Byron, who needs a new watch. Okay.
Oh, it's just fine.
I'm just glad you managed to find the internet again. So that can be so elusive.
It can, you know.
Yes. So, Angie, we were just about to talk about, we were talking a little bit about image cache module, and you wrote an article on the Lullabot site about sort of the image cache versus the image module and image exact and stuff like that. And so I was thinking we could talk a little bit more about sort of the wonderful world of image exact and how it sort of compares and contrasts to using image module, and if it does it work together with image module or what? So.
Well, yeah, image cache is really cool, actually, and it's pretty rapidly turning into one of those gotta have modules up there with CCK and views and everything else. So what my article was about is we needed for one of the client sites that we're working on, we needed the ability to resize images on the fly. And so we were comparing kind of the two main ways to do that. And one is to use image module. And then image module has a sister module called image exact sizes, which will resize those on the fly. And then we also have, like I say, an image field, CCK field type that uses image cache to do the same thing. Image cache could probably actually be used either way. It was just kind of a means of comparing and contrasting them and stuff like that. But so the basic gist of that article is that image module will attach when you create an image, it creates a node for that image. So images are nodes. You can do things like, you know, attach ratings to them. You can, you know, search for them. You can give them a description and a title. You can do everything that you can do with nodes with images if you use image module. Some people don't want that overhead. They don't want a node for every image on the site because they're going to have millions of images, and that's just making their, you know, table that much bigger and stuff like that. So the other option is to use image field, which just basically attaches the image file to an existing node. And what image cache can do is take any image that you have and then dynamically on the fly generate thumbnails or scaled views or resized or whatever you need. So,
right. The sexy one for me is always the square version of an image.
Yeah.
Because from a design standpoint, you can always if you can usually crop an image to a square, and then you know exactly the aspect ratio. Mm-hmm. That lots of times, if it's going to be a portrait or landscape, and you don't know from a design standpoint to show like a, I don't know, user icon or sort of latest image or something like that, if you can crop it to a square, it's always an advantage because you can know what shape it'll be and you can resize it to a certain size and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I know that Image Exact did that for images, but does Image Cache do that?
Image Cache can do that too. Image Exact sizes is a much easier module to use because you just say, I want this size that I'm going to call square or whatever, and it's going to be 50 pixels by 50 pixels, and you're done. Image Cache is a little bit fancier in that you can do like a scaling action and a cropping action and this kind of stuff. So you can do the same thing. It's just a little bit more involved because you have to actually write a theme function that will grab the correct version of your image and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So for newbies, I recommend Image Exact sizes. And for theming ninjas or people on a high performance site that need the images, you know, they want the ability to do things dynamically and all that kind of stuff, then Image Cache is probably the way to go.
Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, just the image handling in Drupal in general has always been sort of difficult. And this concept of images being their own nodes is oftentimes sort of puts more emphasis on them than a lot of people would like when they just want to stick something quickly into their article that they're writing and stuff like that. And so neither of these really solve that problem exactly. The image cache along with the image field really allows for a field that's an image in a node. So when you're creating a CCK node, you could have like, I don't know, a series of images for, like, I don't know, teaser,
like, say, an album cover or something like that. You know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But then that's going to get themed in a certain way. So if you want it to appear always in a certain place, you know, consistent across all of these nodes of a given type, that's a really good way to go. But for just, like, sticking something up into an article,
Yeah, then you're looking at something like maybe Image Assist or something, some other kind of module. This is more for having a product that, or like a product image that's displayed with every node or something like that.
Right. And then if you've got relatively skilled users, you could just use, I mean, and I think this is sort of the catch-22, is that most Drupal developers are relatively skilled at this kind of thing, and so they don't have their own inherent need to develop something above and beyond just upload module. It's like, well, just upload the image, and then
SRC, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Because everybody knows HTML, right?
You know? Yeah, just write in the image source into the source HTML of the node that you're writing. So, Catch 22. I really like the TinyMCE system with their image manager, which is really, really cool for basically you get a WYSIWYG interface where you can upload an image like right into the WYSIWYG, which is really cool. So
yeah, and they've got all kinds of like JavaScript tools to crop it on the fly and things like that. So
yeah.
The problem with that is, of course, it's not GPL'd. So if one of these jQuery wizards, if you're out there, want to write an automatic image cropping tool for Drupal, that would be really neat. You know, hint, hint. Hey.
Yeah.
Because everybody always talks about having better image support in Drupal, but it takes someone to actually code it up.
Yeah, with jQuery in there now, I mean, I think someone wants to do some what I would call advanced experimentation with jQuery. That'd be a cool thing. So, yeah. Oh, I never talked about my block cache module. I'm so proud of my block cache module.
That's an awesome module.
And we're proud of you, Jeff.
It's so simple, but it's great. So here's the problem, and here's the solution. The problem is that on high-performance Drupal sites, every query to the database counts. Every Drupal calculation and stuff like that counts. And so you need to start really fine-tuning how the page gets displayed. With anonymous users, you can turn on Drupal's page caching mechanism, and the whole page basically gets called in one database query. So it just outputs it really fast, almost like a static HTML page with Apache, and that's not a problem. But the problem it becomes when you start getting users logging in, all of the page caching goes out the window because you have dynamic content on every page that might include the user's username and you know, who else is logged in right now. And I mean, you can do all sorts of stuff that really requires page updating on every page. But really, a lot of times where the overhead comes from these complex database calls and complex stuff on the page is from the blocks on the in the sidebars. And so those might display, I don't know, other content that's similar to this piece of content, or the users that are logged in, or a real sort of classic uses a lot of data processing power on every page is what's the tagadelic that shows you like what are the popular tags on your site. And so what block cache does is it allows you to cache these blocks in different ways, so that you can cache them per page or per site. So let's say, your list of users that are online, is the same on every page, but you only want it to update every 10 minutes instead of updating with every page load. You can cache that and just have it update every 10 minutes. Or you can also cache per user, and it's language locale module aware now and stuff. And I'm really proud of it. It came together. It's pretty simple, but it really seems to work. And I thought I should talk about it in one of the podcasts. So there you go.
Yeah, check it out. It's cool.
So Drupal 5, is that out yet? Anybody? Is it out?
There's strong rumors of a beta, but as of like about an hour ago, there were no announcements yet.
So how many bugs are there? Are there a lot of bugs? What's going on?
Critical bugs looks like there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 6 or 7 if I could count. And of those, 4 of them are ready to be committed, so that's a good sign. And then a couple of them are, one of them's active, that's a jQuery thing. jQuery 1.0.2 has a bug in it, so we're just kind of waiting on 1.0.3 to get put out, and then we'll be able to fix that. It's not a huge thing, it just clears the radio button. It's kind of annoying.
That is annoying.
And the other two are, they need review, so folks, review the patches. The critical issue queue you can always get to by enabling the contributor links block in your Drupal.org profile. And then if you go down the list, it's like the fourth link down, there's a critical issues. And when that queue is empty, that's when Drupal 5.0 gets released.
So could be relatively soon, a beta version at least. Do we have a new theme? What's going on with that?
Don't you want to talk about that, Jeff?
Well, there's been a lot of people and sort of various groups of people working on themes. We'll see what happens. I guess it's really kind of all up to the core people as to what's going to happen. I've been working a lot on the Zen theme, which aims to be just a very simple XHTML-based theme. Stephen Wittens and Adrian Rousseau and Stefan, I don't know his last name exactly. Well, it probably, I do know it, but I can't pronounce it. Have all been working on a theme called Themetastic, which is a actually really, really nicely designed theme. It's sort of a roll of the dice what happens at this point, but I will just be excited as long as something new comes in. We can kind of put the blue marine behind us and stuff like that. But
anything but blue marine.
What's the idea of the Zen theme? What is it?
Well, The name is an homage to the CSS Zen Garden. The idea is that you could have basically this XHTML framework that you could give off to your designers and basically say, CSS this. Just make it look how you want it to look using pure CSS design. And that's sort of the idea behind it. And technically, it focuses on that. It focuses to really be something that's very manipulatable. I mean, it very well could be that the Thematastic framework could work the same way. It would be nice to sort of merge the two projects together, because the Thematastic is doing some really interesting things. I don't know that it'll happen if and when it gets into Drupal 5, but there's I know that Stephen Wittens wrote a jQuery widget called Farbtastic, which is like a color picker, and the idea of the Thematastic theme is that you can change the color of it using these color pickers, and it'll... I'm not quite sure how it handles it, if it handles it on the CSS level or if it actually uses like one of the image libraries to recreate the images with new colors or what. But the whole concept of it is really neat. And I like the idea of it. So,
but you're saying that the idea of the Zen theme is that basically you can just create a new style sheet and you would get a new theme that way rather than having to go and manipulate the HTML again. That's sort of what I'm hearing.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, I mean, there's already been several themes that have been written based on the Zen theme. And kind of the one that's sort of the core... Well, the main Zen theme that I'm just calling Zen now, originally started as, I think, it was Deliciously Blue as a contributed theme, and then Farshid, another last name I can't pronounce, wrote... I'd contributed the Zen theme with some designs that I had done, that I wasn't crazy about, but were okay designs, but it was really more about the framework. But then Farshid took and sort of ported and pimped out this other theme that I really liked, so we just sort of moved that one in as the main theme. But the idea is that by having like a sub these ideas of sub-themes that Drupal does already out of the box, you can just write a different style.css file, drop it in a subdirectory of the Zen theme, and you have a whole new design. So there's already a fixed width version there, and then I'm working on porting over some of the stuff that I did originally to work on the current updated version of Zen. But you can find that in the at drupal.org/projects/Zen, or is it project? drupal.org/project/Zen. I don't know that there's a project for Thematastic, but I think that you may be able to just get that one when you download Drupal 5. So,
an issue for it, which is Node 88202, and there you can see a demo site of it and stuff like that.
And then there's the Blue Breeze theme that is also mentioned somewhere, which is based on Zen as well. So. I just sort of like that idea of really separating out the CSS theming, because there's a lot of people out there who do CSS, and the current way that Drupal's HTML is laid out tends to turn them off, and it would be nice to sort of flip the switch on that one and be able to turn them on and get a lot more CSS-based designs in Drupal. So, cool stuff.
Anything but Blue Marine. No.
Yeah.
That's the mantra for 5.
Yeah. Jeff, you wanted to talk a little bit about the sort of the new form API that's going into Drupal 5. We should probably in the process of sort of transitioning people over into Drupal 5, talk a little bit about the different things that are going into Drupal 5 and sort of how they're changing things behind the scenes. One thing to mention quick is that there's been a change, and now each version of Drupal won't be point releases will actually be incremental bug fixes and stuff like that. So the next major version of Drupal beyond Drupal 5 will be Drupal 6. So in 6 months or however long it takes, there'll be Drupal 6 and then Drupal 7. But Drupal 5.1 will just be like a bug fix kind of a release. So when we talk about the Drupal 5, which is not out yet, still in isn't even beta out yet, but you wanted to talk about the Form API 2.0.
Yes. Actually, it's interesting because it wasn't going to be called Form API 2.0 until until right up to the edge of the Drupal 5 code freeze, at which point Adrian looked at the list of things that had actually gone in and said, hey, wait a minute, this was the game plan for Form API 2.0. Cool. So it was an adventure in incrementally adding features and developing things until we realized we had the next Form API milestone. But the question is, what are all of those nifty features? One of the biggest changes, in Drupal 4.7, to build a form, what you did is you created this array that held all of the different form elements, and then you fed it to the Drupal get form function, and it would process it if the user had submitted some data, and it would render it to HTML and display it on the screen and stuff like that. In Drupal 5, it's handled a little bit differently. Basically, for each form that you want to create, you make a dedicated function for it that does nothing but build that form and return the array with that form definition. The advantage of that is that it's a lot easier to pull that form up from lots of different places inside of Drupal. And in your function that, say, displays a form on screen, all you do is call Drupal get form with the ID of that form. And then Drupal automatically goes and looks up the function for it, builds the form, and renders it. So it's sort of separating the process of putting the form up on the screen and actually building it. And that leads into one of the other advantages that is in there with Drupal 5. Now it's possible for a module developer to create forms, populate them with data, submit them, validate them, process the information, all in the background without actually triggering any like user interaction or whatever. So for import-export processes, when you're trying to pull in a bunch of data or automating processes or things like that, it's possible for a module to sort of do all of the form submission stuff that would have previously required lots of user interaction. Adrian has put together a test module, actually, that allows users to go to pull up like a clean Drupal 5.0 install and walk through the process of configuring it and getting the whole site just so, you know, set up the blocks and, you know, add some nodes and stuff like that. And it records all of the forms that they've filled out and submitted and saves them in a little like script file that they can then distribute with a new Drupal installation. So you could, it's almost a quick and easy way of rolling up a custom Drupal distribution that way. Like all the configuration work could be just wrapped into a little script file. And that's just one of the possible applications of the new form subsystems.
So cool. So I have a couple of questions about that because that sounds really, really fascinating. But previously, when I wanted to create a node, what I would do is, you know, build the node object and then submit that to the node save function, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm hearing you say now is that what I could do is I could just build the form array and then pass it to the node form and do that all programmatically. Is that right?
It's possible to do almost everything programmatically with Form API now. The node form in particular is a little tricky because it's probably one of the most complex forms in Drupal, but
sure.
It's almost certainly possible. Depending on the complexity of what you're trying to do, it may require some workarounds, but it It's I know there are a couple people who've already experimentally whipped up modules that do things like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm also starting to get a little confused here, right? Because we still have things like the Node API hook with all the different operations. And then, you know, so one way to build a submission is to use the Node API hooks. But now we have hook form alter, which is another way that we could get into the system and make changes. And I wonder, you know, what which one might be better than others and, you know, things like that. Because what you have with the form API is you have a way to get into the system and do things. But what you have with the Node API is you have state, right? So you know that at this part of the form submission, you're in the validate routine. If it's in this part, you have the update or the insert, or, you know, this is after everything has been processed. And you don't have that information, or at least all of that information, with the form API routines. So any thoughts on that, on, you know, in which cases you would use which hooks? Or
That's actually one of the current weaknesses that we're trying to get past. The Node API system it's sort of a legacy system right now. A lot of the things that it is used for are really possible to do in the form API, although it's a little newer and people aren't as used to them. Moshe actually had patch for 5.0 that moved over all of the old Node API submit, update, stuff like that to use Form API. But at the last minute, it looked like people were just not quite certain about making that transition this quickly. So that ended up getting rolled back. But it looks like that's one of the things that's definitely on the whiteboard for Drupal 6 once this is done. In general, it's probably more future-proof to use Form API to handle things like adding fields to nodes and stuff like that. But if you're just looking at, you know, altering how a node is displayed when you pull it up or things like that, then the Node API functions are still going to be more useful.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of things like a workflow module or actions module that depend on the state that the node is in order to determine when a workflow should be changed, you know, and just seeing how that would map over to something like the Forms API. But yeah, it's interesting stuff, for sure.
It's still evolving to some extent. The code is still in place. Working out best practices and, like, the cleanest ways to solve certain problems with the new tools that are in place is one of the things that is still going on.
Sure.
But this idea of having macros and macro recording is fascinating.
And it's really cool, and it ties in nicely with the new installer system that's there in Drupal 5, since that was actually, you know, Adrian's initial purpose for this macro recording module, that you'd be able to just grab your macro and stick it in with an installer profile and have a new user go click, and they'd have a fully, completely configured Drupal site with some prefabricated content already in place.
Very cool. Very, very cool stuff. Well, all right. Let's call that a podcast, and we'll try it again next week. I've still got these little mini podcasts I'm going to put out with the interviews that Robert Douglas did with the Summer Code students. If anyone has questions, please call. We periodically do listener voicemail podcasts where we get on and answer questions that people have called in with. And so you should call 877-LULLABOT. That's 1-877-585-5226, and you can call that with Skype or Gizmo, or if you're in the U.S. and Canada, just pick up your phone and call toll-free. So there you go. Thanks, everybody, for podcast 25. Bye-bye. What's that, like, silver anniversary or something? Tyler. All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.